prophecy that God put in His Word is being literally fulfilled exactly as He wrote it. And I'm not amazed. I'm just thankful. And I did this one tonight because one of the things that I got in a lot of trouble with when I first came up here and started doing these lectures, I went all over on all these lectures I presented all those years. And I preached it here when I first got up here, because this was one thing that I didn't care whether they agreed with what I had to say or not. I knew it was right. When I was growing up, a lot of preachers taught that there were two battles of Gog and Magog. There was one at the end of the millennial reign, because it does say Gog and Magog back there. And then there was one that was in the 38th and 39th chapters of Ezekiel. It was amazing how many preachers, how many books there were on that. Well, when I have always approached the Bible in this manner. I believe exactly what it says. And then I set about to see if God was super gracious and had already put the things in part, the different faults and everything. I wanted to see if they were there. Sometimes they were. Sometimes they weren't. But if they weren't there, I didn't care. God could turn water into wine. He could do anything. So where I found them, I told people about them. And I didn't tell them because I was trying to help God or to enhance His Word. I didn't do it for that reason at all. I just did it because I just wanted to see if God had done it. That's why He called me. But I didn't know that then. I had an avid curiosity about it. So in my first two books, I put this in there, what I'm going to show you. Now, when I came to this, I'm going to tell you a third thing I do. If I read it in the Bible, I know it's true, period, no exception. So I went and I got out all the different books and maps that I could find, and they were extensive. And I wasn't doing it to check God out. I just wanted to know where these people were He was talking about in Ezekiel, because they were teaching that there were two different battles of Ezekiel, one that's coming right up, and another that's going to happen 1,000 years all down the line. They were two different battles. The first thing I reasoned out was, that second battle are the descendants of Gog and Magog. And then I found proof that they all fled and went back to their homes in Isaiah. That's it. Okay, so what did I do next? I looked at those maps and all that stuff. They put those people where they wanted their theology to fit. I never saw anything like it. They'd have one of them way up here, these descendants of Gog and Magog. And they had a bunch of them. They'd put one up near Germany, and they'd put another one down here. And the next one, he would put it over here, and the next one would put it over there, and put it over there. I never saw such a mess in my life. So I said, wait a minute, what's causing this? So I said, well, if I'm going to know where they were, maybe the Bible tells me. Maybe the Bible identifies it. So I said, I'm just going, and this is what I always did. If I couldn't find any proof, I just believed it. And then in this case, I was able to let the Bible tell me where those people were. So I put this out. I had a preacher down in Texas, and they were having a meeting, and they were, they were fellowshipping me, and he got so mad at me, he walked out. He was so mad he couldn't stand it. The rest of them, they didn't like it. But this was one time I didn't care. I usually back up and shy away because I don't want to hurt people's feelings. But this time, I couldn't put up with it. So I found it, and it was in the Bible, and it was right there in Ezekiel. And so when I found it, I said, Okay. Now I got absolute proof. I don't have to dig around under old buildings. I don't have to look for faults and anything else. I never have tried to help God. But if I can't find the, where he's put it in the earth, you don't think I'm going to tell you that I don't believe it. If God can turn water into wine, that's absolutely impossible. If he could part the waters of the Red Sea and hold them on both one side, that's absolutely impossible. But am I certain he did it? Yes. Why? The Bible says so. And in all these other cases, he put something there to let you know. I don't have to see something to believe what it says. But I love God, and I love the way he operates, and I look to see, is there some way that I can find where Magog, Meshach, Tubal, where were they? And there was. And when I found it, I said, okay. And I put this thing out. Now, I started teaching this when I first came up here. Anime, when I first came up here, I was teaching this. I came up here in 1976. I put out the whole series. I went all over the world preaching it in every place. And by the time I finished, there were a lot of people that believed it, because the Bible, in the very verses that people in 38 and 39 told where they were. And I said, okay, that's it. But I never doubt what God says. You say, well, what if you found that he was wrong? I can't find he's wrong. He's never wrong. So you say, well, if you come to the idea that he's wrong, what do? I just forget about it. Because I've had enough experience with him that I know he's never wrong. So the last 2 days have been exceptionally happy for me, because I now know that what we've been talking about recently, and the Lord and the battle beginning over there in the Middle East being the last part of the next administration, it's concrete. Because I knew what Putin was going to do. I told you the Cold War was coming back. I told you exactly what he would do. And, you know, they were showing Romney on this afternoon, said he was the most dangerous man in the world. I put that out before Romney ever even said it. And I said it because the Bible indicated that that Magog, the land of Magog, the ruler up there would be awful. And I watched Russia, and I saw what Putin was doing. I'm not all that smart. I don't claim to be. But I'm very studious, and God helps me. And so I put this out. Well, the last 2 days, I don't feel happy because I know I'm right. I feel happy because maybe some people will wake up and quit believing there are two battles of Gog and Magog, and realize that this thing is coming down on our head, and it's coming down probably at the very last part of the next administration. And if you can, I had someone ask me the other day, who do you think is going to be the next president? I don't have the foggiest idea. You say, why? Listen, the Bible's never wrong. And the Bible doesn't give you their name and address. And I was wrong. I just can't predict who's going to win president. The rest of you were honest with yourself. When the thing first started and we were where we are in these other elections, you were probably wrong too. It's just, you can't. But this I do know for a fact. God puts them up there. And they suit his purpose. And all things work together for good to them that love God. And look at what he did with the Pharaoh. Look at what he did with Nebuchadnezzar. He did that with Obama. You say, are you sure? Yeah, I'm pretty sure. You say, are you positive? Oh, no. But I might as well say it. I'm certain he put him up there. And he put the Pharaoh up there. The Bible indicates that. It indicates he put Nebuchadnezzar up there. He's God is in control of this whole operation. And I love to try and figure out, what are you going to do next, Lord? And then I wonder, how are you going to do that, Lord? Is that wrong? Is that not trusting the Bible? No. You ought to have a curiosity. That's why you're here. How's God going to do this? And the big thing that you have a curiosity about is, when is he going to do it? Well, I can finally tell you, it's here. And I'm certain about it. You say, what if you're wrong? Well, then I'll just admit I'm a failure. But I already knew that. But I won't stop believing God's a success. Now, page one. Pre-stage of Ezekiel 38 and 39 prophecy is here. It started with a UN meeting, and it is now here, and I can say for the first time, I kept saying, I'm guessing, but it could be between such and such a time, such and such a time. But I told him I was guessing, I was honest. I wasn't about to try to tell you what it was going to do until I got down toward the last, because I just wasn't absolutely sure how this was going to come in at the last time. Pre-stage of Ezekiel 38 and 39 prophecy is here. The Israelis shall attack the Syrian Antichrist near the ending of the next administration. And prophecy diagram 321 will be activated. Now, I've got one on the last sheet of this. A consolidated blog was first issued in 2009. It's the same as the one that's on this one. The series appears on our prophecy updates. 28 to 39 were issued during 2000, since ancient computer crashed before the present century. My old computer, I had a whole bunch of stuff on there, and it crashed. Somebody wanted to destroy it, and they destroyed it. And they couldn't fix it. They couldn't do anything with it. So I don't know why they destroyed it, but they did. And so I got another one. I've still got it over there, and it's still operating, and I've got another one, and it's making it easier for me to put these blogs out, but somebody keeps trying to stop me from doing this. I've had more trouble with this blog than you'd ever believe, and they don't like it, and I keep getting things back from the people that put this thing up for me saying, Something is wrong. And they tell me, we're losing track of this, we're losing track of that. And I keep working and working and working until I finally get it out. And between Treg and Lisa, Mike's wife, we get them out. But it's very stressful on my tummy. And so it drains me. At 83... when you're caught in a lot of stress, it drains your belly. I put it plainly, your abdominal up, your latus, and your latus rectum too, makes your latus rectum active. I've taught it at Dardanelle Missionary Baptist Church for 40 plus years. See the archive prophecy update number 321. Now, you notice on that, I started it when Israel was going to attack the Antichrist. I had a good reason for doing that. I wasn't quite sure how this was going to work in, so I just started it there and figured, well, when I get up there, I'll figure out the first part. The Lord, if He will reveal it, He made the actions, the fulfillment of His prophecy just before that, I believed would become evident just before it happened. I believed that, but I wasn't sure. Well, sure enough, it did. So when it started to do that, I said, I thank God. I even shed a tear or two. I was so happy that I was going to get to go home, and I might get to go home with you all. And I was so happy that I was going to see Imogene and to go home with you all, and all of us see Imogene at the same time. And for me to see my mom and my dad and my grandparents and a lot of my uncle and my Aunt Velta and my Aunt May, and my Aunt Eva, who I never knew, she died at a young age. It was perfect. I'm almost crying now. But the truth of the matter is, I am so happy I could cry. Because now I know that even if I die before you all, before the rapture, I'm going to see you all up there. Now, I'll have a good time waiting with Imogene. Don't you worry about it. Now, he says, the attack of the Israel, which is the king of the south, will not attack the Syrian Antichrist, king of the north, before the last days of the next administration. It's not going to happen. You say, oh, that looks bad over there. How many times have I put these things out and told him, this is not it, this is not it, this is not it. And some of these guys have got all this stuff going, this is it, this is it. Not me. I waited until this happened. And it's happened. And it happened at the United Nations meeting. It's been building up to it, but I wanted to be sure. Daniel 7, 24, 25. And the 10 horns out of this kingdom are 10 kings that shall arise, and another shall rise after them, and he shall be diverse from the first, and he shall subdue 3 kings. I'm not going to get into details on this. It's like my plan for the economy, what I'm going to do to make the country prosperous again, what I'm going to make us a great nation again. I'm not going to reveal the details. But stay tuned for the next announcement, because I may name the details. Because I'm going to work on this for quite a while, Lord willing. Lord willing. He shall speak great words about the Most High and shall wear out the saints of the Most High. Well, he'll wear out Israel. Now remember, when Daniel wrote this, it's 600 B.C. And remember, they were the saints of the Most High. They're going to get wore out in the Negev wilderness. But he ain't going to kill all of them. God won't let him. And to think to change times and laws. What is Islam trying to do right now? Sharia law. And they're going to be successful in Europe in getting that Sharia law to be accepted in some of those governments. That's it. Isn't that what that is? To change times and laws? Sharia law didn't come in until after Islam came in. And Islam came in long after Christianity came in. You say, well, that's too obvious. This thing was always obvious. But things had to happen before you could see that it was obvious. When I was over there, the Sharia law, you know, that was something new to me. I just knew they had Sharia law, but I didn't know what all it taught. Now I do. And to change times and laws, and they shall be given into his hand. How long is Israel? They're lost as a goose. They're a nation that's out of God's favor. But remember, they're not going to be that way much longer. Until a time and times and the dividing of times. 1 year plus 2 years plus a half a year. So what's going to happen at the end of that time? Israel will be saved in a day. Boom, boom, boom. That's it. You say, well, how'd you figure that out? I didn't. God showed me. You say, how'd he do? Speak in your ear? No, I'm an analyst. I'm not a synoptic analyst by accident. It was God's will that I'd be that. I didn't know what was happening. I know I loved it, but I hated making decisions that men could lose their lives with if I was wrong. That's another reason I got a bad tummy. I've made some decisions and men lost their lives. But they weren't so bad that we had to do it. So I just thank God this is about over. I won't have to get so frustrated I walk up an escalator backwards in the National Security Building while it's running. I tell you, this has taken a toll on my body. I don't want your sympathy. I just want you to know that God knows what he's doing. And I guarantee you that God knows what he's doing. And he's proven it to me. And as I guess you'd put in colloquial terms, he's my man. God's my man. And in these movies they say, he's the man. No, God's the man. Ezekiel 38, 1 and 2. And the word of the Lord came unto me saying, son of man, comma. He's Ezekiel's the son of man. Set thy face against God, comma, 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 comma. That's not kamikaze, that's comma. It's in there for a reason. Set it against God. Why did he put the comma in there? The land of Magog. That's why he put it in there. That's why he put it in there. Why didn't he just say Gog, the chief prince of Magog? They started making the ruler of Russia the Antichrist. They were out of their mind. They just had to have those as two different Bibles. Two different. Well, look at it for yourself. There's a big. You say, well, God doesn't inspire commas. Oh, yes, he does. He said, the land of Magog. Well, who is Gog? Why do you think the two commas are in there? He tells you. The chief prince of Meshach and Tubal. And prophesy against him. That's what it says. I mean, I'm not an English major, but I went to different schools and learned English, and I had to have it again in the seminary. And then when I was in National Security Agency, I had to learn what the punctuations were in foreign languages. So I looked at that and I said, well, my goodness, why didn't somebody see that? I don't know. But here's how I found out where Meshach and Tubal were, and I'll get to that before I'm finished. I took all those charts and I tried to find it. Oh man, I had books, charts all over the place, just like that wall thing. They put them in different places. They were scattered all over Asia. And I said, well, I got to find this. Maybe I can find it somewhere. So I went through and I analyzed Ezekiel like a fine-tooth comb. It was the first thing I ever put out. I put out an exposition on part of chapter 37, all of 38, all of 39, and I went right on into the millennial with it. And it fit like a glove. You say, well, don't you feel proud of yourself? No, I feel proud of God for making me a synoptic analyst. I feel God for giving me an opportunity to be educated. I feel great because God let me go over to Arkansas Tech, and I didn't intend to go over there and take geology. I was already certified in meteorology. When I got over there, I realized this is what he wants. You say, how do you know? I just know. It's one of the wonderful things about my life. When I'm in tune with God, I just know. Have you ever thought, I just know and been wrong? No. But lots of times I've thought, well, I think this is right. And I've gone ahead and used it anyway. And he even tried to stop me by maybe making the computer not work right. But old stubborn me. But that's in the past. That's in the past. Now I know. And believe me, what I'm telling you about what's going to happen, it may not happen precisely at the end of the next administration, but it's going to happen right there at that time. It might go over into the next one. I'm just telling you that because I feel so good about it, I'm telling you it's going to happen at the next time, at the end of it. Because I just know. Okay. He says, Gog, high extension, appears for the first time in Ezekiel. He is the Antichrist of whom so much has been written. Please note that he is identified as the chief prince of Meshach and Tubal. Many commentators, especially in the last 100 years, have not identified him as the Antichrist, but have identified him as the ruler or chief prince of the land of Magog, which I do not believe Scripture justifies. They've not identified as the Antichrist. They call him chief prince of Meshach and Tubal, but they don't put him in the right place. Before the 20th century, many identified him as the Antichrist. In verse 2, Ezekiel is told to set his face against two separate things, a person and a place. The person is Gog, Antichrist. And the place is the land of the descendants of Magog, where it existed in Ezekiel's day. And I'm going to show you where it is. If we do not locate the territories of Meshach, of Magog, Meshach, and Tubal as they existed in Ezekiel's day, then we can have no idea as to where the Antichrist will soon rear his head or the area from which his attack will be launched. You pick up a book, you read it, you say, I like this writer. And you go ahead and you pick it up. And once you have picked it up, you discover he didn't go along with the guy you liked in the book you read before. So I said, I can't put something in there that I'm not sure of. Why? Because more than 2,500 years have slipped by since the bloodlines of all three men have been distributed across the entire planet. I'm looking at the descendants of Magog right here. You got Magog blood in you. I'm looking at the descendants of Tubal right here. You got it in you. We're a mixed pot. we're a nation that they call us a mixed bag of tricks. And that's what we are. You got the blood in you. So now where's the Antichrist going to come from? Well, it's Henry. What was his name? Kissinger. Yeah. What? Might even be Robert. I suspect you because you look kind of suspicious. But you know, you can't do that. You can't do that. But they say, well, we do. I know, and you sell books, don't you? They sell a lot of books, and they make a lot of money, don't they? And they set up in estates, and they've got millions of dollars, some of them. And we sit down here, but I'm the happiest man alive. I don't have a lot. I don't have any money. If I had money, I'd be suspicious of my own self. God provides enough. Well, more than enough. I'll tell you the truth. He does. He didn't when Imogene and I were huffing it, but he does now. I do all right. I help the kids. And God does. But, you know, I'm scared to death. My kids will turn out bad because Imogene and I didn't have it good. And God worked with us. So if you're poor, hey, Shirley, if you're poor, you got it made. You did. Forgetting those things, and the hardest thing you have to do in life, forgetting those things that are behind. I press toward the mark for the prize, the high calling of Jesus. I don't care how many times you've been divorced. I don't care how many times you've had fights with your wife. I don't care what you've done. I don't care if you're mad as a devil at one another. Forget about it. It's all over. Forgetting those things that are behind, I press toward the mark for the prize, the high calling of God in Christ Jesus. Man, that's wonderful. I keep kidding Anna Mae about marrying me. Lord have mercy, she got mad one time. I don't want to marry Anna Mae. You see her as a nice, quiet woman. Matter of fact, I don't want to marry anybody. I had the woman God gave me, and I still love her. Our sex life was horrible, but it doesn't matter. We had a wonderful time together. Uh-oh, Terry's got me now. She's looking up over those glasses. That's more to marriage than sex. Lot more. If you do it for sex, you won't stay together very long. Okay. Why? Because the Antichrist is not the chief prince of Meshach. He is the chief prince of Meshach and Tubal. He will come from the area where their descendants were settled in 500 and 600 B.C. Here we go. I will attempt to use two different sources to locate where the descendants of Meshach and Tubal were clustered at the time of Daniel's writings. Here we go. The first is found in the 27th chapter of Ezekiel, and the second is from the Assyrian monument stones of that period. Now, this is something that was from the was from the time of that we're talking about. Ezekiel 27:3. And say unto Tyrus, O thou that art situate at the entrance of the sea. What sea? The Mediterranean Sea. Which art a merchant of the people of for many isles. Thus saith the Lord God, O Tyrus, thou hast said, I am of perfect beauty. My brother told me that couldn't be the... He said, that's not the devil. He said, that's not the devil. I said, it has to be. I said, because besides Jesus, I'm the only other one that was created that way. And that's when he almost hit me. In any case, no, that didn't quite work that way. I just told a fib. Titus said unto the Lord, O Tyrus, thou hast said, I am of perfect beauty. God created the devil, and he was of perfect beauty. God puts these things in there just to see how much research you're going to do. That's what he meant, said, to show yourself proof. He didn't mean for you to run home, get some book that had a bunch of sermon outlines in it, and on Saturday night, just when you were tired and wore out, sit by a lamp and look at that thing and say, practice how you're going to preach it, and get up in the pulpit the next morning, practice how you preach it, and always find a good poem to close at the end to get them crying. Then tell a puppy dog tale, and they'll roll down the aisle. I was born in that era. I know what I'm talking about. And the truth of the matter is, I was just a kid. I didn't know the difference. He says, Tyrus was a seaport on the southern coast of what we know today as Lebanon. and is directly north of Israel. Tyrus built its first great seawall to protect its harbored ships more than 3,000 years ago and was a thriving seaport in Ezekiel's day. Its ships carried merchandise from the countries of the east across all the Mediterranean and even as far north as the shores of the English Channel. Isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting? You'd almost think the gospel of the Old Testament might have got up in there. They were called Phoenicians, many of them. Sidon, was also a seaport, and less than 20 miles separated the two cities. The wise men of Tyrus were the navigators of the ships, and the men of Sidon were the deckhands. They were all in Lebanon. That's where their ports were. That's where Meshach and Tubal were. That's where they settled. You say, well, what about all those other books? I don't care what they said. This is where they were. You say, how do you know? That's what the Bible indicates. As yet, says, were the deckhands. As yet, but receive power as... Well, where in the world am I? No, that's not the right one. Receive power... That's on the last page. This is turned upside down. Somebody put... See, there isn't. You passed these out, didn't you? Let me see. Well, no, I'm trying to find number two. No, I apologize, Ken. Wasn't you, it was... No, he... Well, he's a deacon. He might have done that. I just better not find any waste matter on my car seat when I get out of here. That I've seen that before. Ezekiel 38, 1 and 2. Three. Okay, and that were the deckhands. These in the Navy they call them deck apes. Ask John if he was a deck ape next time he comes down here. I stayed with a bunch of deck apes. They called me an Airedale when I had to work with the Marines sometimes or the Navy sometimes. Portrayed in Ezekiel 27:8. The inhabitants of Sidon and Aved were thy mariners, thy wise men, O Tyrus, that were in thee. They were thy pilots. Now hearing all this, bearing all this in mind, let us look at Ezekiel 27:13. Javan, Tubal, and Meshach, they were thy merchants. Hey, they carried stuff all over the Mediterranean. They came out of Lebanon. They traded the persons of men and vessels of brass in thy market. They went out and captured people. They'd go over into what we call Assyria now. They'd capture them. They'd bring them back. They'd sell them as slaves. And they'd carry them all over the Mediterranean. Meshach and Tubal were warlike tribes who often took their captives, persons of men. And the vessels of brass they had captured or hammered out themselves and carried them to the nearest seaport for trading. How about that? That's Greater Syria. They carried stuff out of Greater Syria. Slaves to the market. The captives were, of course, loaded on the ships and sold as slaves in foreign ports of trade. This is historical and it's true. Why the nearest seaport? Now listen, this is also important. If you're an analyst, you've got to learn to examine every detail. You must not over-examine, but you must examine reality. He says, because in Ezekiel's day, travel was by foot, donkey, camel, and horse. People always carried their trading goods to the nearest port. Think about that. Would you go on foot an extra 200 miles to get to another port? No. Particularly slaves. Therefore, I conclude that Meshach and Tubal must have roamed in the area we know today as Syria, Lebanon, northwestern Iraq, and southern Turkey. And that's what Syria considers their territory. Greater Syria covers that area. Meshach and Tubal are the Mishke and Taboli of the Assyrian stone monuments. Now let's take something that they was in stone. In the time of Sargon and Sennacherib, 700 BC, the territory of Tubal adjoined southern Cilicia, while that of Meshach filled the highlands to the east of Tubal. Considering the locations derived from the Bible and stone tablets, it appears that the Antichrist, as the chief prince of the area once occupied by Meshach and Tubal, is likely to rise and eventually to attack Israel from Syria or Lebanon. But Israel's going to attack them. I'm certain. It says so in Ezekiel. I mean, it says so in Daniel. In Daniel 40 and 41. And since Lebanon is virtually controlled by Syria, it appears Syria is the best guess for his homeland. I think it's going to work out that way. Part 2, Ezekiel 31, 33. And the word of the Lord came unto me, saying, Son of man, set thy face against Gog, the land of Magog, the chief prince of Meshach and Tubal, and prophesy against him, and say, Thus saith the Lord God, Behold, I am against thee, O Gog, the chief prince of Meshach and Tubal. He's against the chief prince of Meshach and Tubal. And that's he's there, and that's who Gog is. Gog is the ruler of Meshach and Tubal. He is the king of the north. Part 1 established from the scriptures and the Assyrian stone monuments and the descendants of Meshach and Tubal at the time Ezekiel wrote his prophecies were primarily located in what we know as Syria and Lebanon. So you don't have to trust me to use false and everything to believe the Bible. I'm not guilty. I use this to show that God said that's where they would be, and then he told you about them. You say, well, what did you have to do? Study to show thyself approved unto God, a workman that needeth not to be ashamed, right dividing the word of truth. I'm not a wasp anymore. Preachers are always bigger when they're young. And when they are in the ministry a while, they get bigger and bigger and bigger. Then one day, God sticks a pin in them. And all the deflation comes out, and they realize they're nothing but a vessel that is an unfit vessel that God prepared to do what they do. And they humble, it humbles them. It has to humble them because you can't face yourself anymore the way you are. We also establish that the prophecy is against a person, Gog, Antichrist, and against a land, the land of Magog. I'm convinced that the Antichrist will attack Israel from Syria. But Israel will hit him first. What have we been wondering about? Is Israel going to attack Iran? Is Israel going to attack Iran? Now he's got in a league now with the rest of them up there. He has met with Syria and he has agreed to work with Syria on that area. They're going to get lured in and sucked up, and then all of a sudden Israel's going to realize it, and they're going to run across into Lebanon when Lebanon starts shooting Katusha missiles in there, and then when they get up there, the Antichrist will have a very cleverly military laid trap waiting for them in southern Syria, and I preached about that. Did you get it anyway? Good. I've been watching the fly flying around, and all of a sudden I saw you yawn, and I thought, she got it. Okay. Part 1 established from the scriptures, well, I'll go there. I'm convinced that, okay, but where was the land of Magog? Where were the Magogites located time of Ezekiel's readings? Flavius Josephus, the noted Jewish historian, makes the following statements concerning the Magogites in Antiquities of the Jews, chapter 6, under the title, How Every Nation Was Denominated from Their First Inhabitants. That's the way it was. I'm a descendant of Adam. God breathed into my forefathers' knowledge and mount the breath of life, and he became a living soul. I'm also a child of Jesus, if you want to put it that way. Who is God? Because he was made a quickening spirit. He redeemed me from what Adam made me. It's you say, well, why didn't he just start over? Because he loved us. When you make something, you love it, even though we're carnal. We love it. We make something, we think it's a beautiful work of art, we love it. We made it. Well, God made us, and he loves us individually. And so what we've got to understand is, God remolds you after he saves you. He works with you like clay because he's the only one that can reshape it. I'm going to start a series on that pretty soon called The Tray, the Molder of the Clay. And I love the series. I preached it many years ago. And I love the series, and I if God will allow it, I'm going to go ahead and preach that. He says, Japheth, the son of Noah, had seven sons. They called the nations by their own names. Magog formed those that from him were called Magogites, who were by the Greeks called the Scythians. The Greek writers of the classic age said the Scythians occupied the area which today we identified as stretching from Moldova, that's in the extreme southeastern Europe, eastward across the Ukraine, you know where the Ukraine is, southern Russia, and into Kazakhstan, then southward into Georgia, remember that's where Putin went in there before, once before, Armenia and Azerbaijan, a little boy that came, stayed with, used to eat meals with us on Sunday and stayed with Ashley, he was from Azerbaijan. Roughly the area north of the Black Sea between the Black and Caspian Seas and the area northwest, north, and northeast of the Caspian Sea. I do not believe the nations in this area will join in the initial attack against Israel. I don't believe they will. But when Israel gets in trouble, but against Israel, but when the Antichrist gets in trouble, he'll bring them down. It'll be toward the end of the tribulation period. It will not be when Syria and the ten, the Antichrist, first attacked Israel. But I am certain they will come down for the final battle of Gog's war, which is the Battle of Armageddon. The Battle of Armageddon, found in Revelation 16:16, is the final battle in Gog's war, which began 3.5 years ago. If you want to be concerned about a thermonuclear war, I can understand that. I can understand it. I do not fear in any way a thermonuclear war. When you go over in Zechariah, and you see that flesh burning, and you see all that, you've never seen pictures of what happens when a volcanic heat flash comes down the side of a mountain. It comes down, and it hits the people, and within a matter of seconds, there's nothing left but bone. That's the truth. Maybe minutes, but in some cases, seconds. That stuff is 1,600 degrees Celsius. It just burns it off. Now, that's what they always use to say, it's a thermonuclear war. No, it's not a thermonuclear war. It's something far worse. If you think a thermonuclear war is bad, you just wait until you see what happens. Aren't you glad you're on God's side? Don't you kind of secretly wish the rapture was the first of the week? Don't you? Well, it's not. But you know what? God's going to get us through that. You say, we may be dead. Yeah, he may give us a bonus. We may get to leave early during that period. Do you think that God looks at us just like we are here? Don't you think God has an eternal view of us? You really think you're going to have legs in heaven? You think God has legs? You say, well, I can have legs. Oh, you can have anything you want as long as God approves it. And God had legs. Jesus had legs, didn't he? He had arms. But most of us picture ourselves as little glowing people walking around in body. We can be that if we want, if it serves God's purpose. But we're bright lights up there. Bright lights. You say, I don't like that. I do, because God says so. And I guarantee you, God says he's got a great reward waiting for us up there. You say, well, I can't think about crazy things like that. Believe me, I didn't used to. But you can't go through what I've been through in synoptic analysis and not realize you've got to get past reality and realize that the last kingdom is an eternal spiritual kingdom. Verse 3. Fails to include the land of Magog as a message directly pointed and personally addressed against the Antichrist Gog, who once again is identified as the chief prince of Meshach and Tubal. Popular writers in the last century brought a teaching into play that is simply not true. They said the word chief was Rosh in the Hebrew language, which is true. But they said it meant Russian, which is a lie, which is not true. The Russian and Hebrew language have never overlapped in history to support such a claim. This, you don't know the research I put into this, but I had to. I didn't dare put down something I couldn't prove, because I knew what trouble I was going to have when I taught this. He is not a Russian prince. He is the chief prince of Meshach and Tubal, and most likely having a Syrian father. I said most likely, but he's going to be a Syrian. The word Rosh in the KJV is translated as chief 90 times, head 349 times, as top 75 times, as the beginning 14 times, as company 12 times, as captain 10 times, and as son 9 times, and as first 6 times, as principal 5 times, as chief man 4 times, and as ruler on 2 occasions. At no time in all of history could it legitimately be identified as someone who is a Russian. You say, why don't they realize that? They don't want to study. And people don't want to think you're going to go through the tribulation period. Don't tell me some of them haven't figured that out. I know they have. I've talked to them. Now listen, you got to make up your mind who you're in this for. I'm convinced this chief prince of Meshach and Tubal will come from either northwestern Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, or southern Turkey. But I will be very surprised if his father is not a Syrian. He will be the leader of a multilateral Arab force that will carry out a surprise attack against Israel from the north. I believe this is spoken of in Daniel 17:12-13. And the 10 horns which thou sawest are 10 kings. Four. Which have received no kingdom as yet, but receive power as kings 1 hour with the beast. How long's that? I don't know. It's more than 3.5 years, but how much more I don't know. But I know that they're going to receive power as kings 1 hour with the beast, and Israel's going to be down there for 3.5 years, so it's not a long period of time. That's a general term meaning a short period of time. This is. These have one mind and shall give their power and strength unto the beast. That's exactly what they're going to do. Listen, this dude's going to show up over there. And he'll be showing up in the next administration, and you'll be watching it. Don't get scared when you see this. God warned us about it a long time ago. And you know who? I'm out there listening. Just about zero. Part 3. Parts 1 and 2 have involved a line-by-line exposition from Ezekiel 37:1 through 38:3. I have established a case to show that the Antichrist is likely to arise in Syria and will launch his initial attack from that position. Although we will have the support of 10 Arab nations, I believe the nations directly involved in the initial attack will be Syria, Lebanon, Turkey, Iraq, and Iran from without. And I wrote this back when about, I put this thing out, I taught this when I came up here. And the Palestinians from within. And you're going to see an attack to come from the north. I believe the other nations which will be immediately become involved in the jihad are most likely Morocco, Algeria, Tunisia, Libya, and Sudan. Have you watched it? Have you watched it happen? I'm not trying to impress you. Don't give me this business. Oh, Brother McElmurray, you're so smart. No, I'm not. God is. And when he put this stuff down, he wanted people to study it. They killed most of people like me off a long time ago. That's what the Waldenses and the others were trying to do, and they killed them. Well, you can expect persecution from the churches that are of our like faith and order. And I'll tell you this, the devil's coming after us first. Thank God we've got God to protect us. Now he says, now, let us continue from Ezekiel 38:4. And I will turn thee back and put hooks into thy jaws and bring thee forth and all thine army, archers and horsemen, all of them clothed with all sorts of armor, even a great company with bucklers and shields, all of them handling swords. This portrays a man overtaking a fleeing beast, putting hooks into its jaws, then turning and pull it along the path God desires to lead it. God's going to do that. He's going to do that to the Antichrist. He's going to put hooks in his jaws. And even though the Antichrist may have a lot of prophecy in his head, He's going to do it. The Antichrist will have no choice in this matter. God will create political and economic circumstances whereby he must come down exactly the amount of time. That's why I think he's going to put the next ones in office. That's why he's always been putting them in. I protest the efforts of some commentators to take the weapons of Ezekiel's day and attempt to carry them into our day and time. Suppose God had inspired Ezekiel to write 1,020 tanks, 923 MiG jets, 3,283 Katusha rockets, 12,000 Katusha launchers, 12,000 Katuka rockets, 723 SAM shoulder-held launchers with 4,607 SAMs, and 2,073 flamethrowers. Let me tell you what would have happened. Sometimes people don't give God credit to having any sense. He didn't write this just to them. He wrote it to us. I had a man that was going to jump on me down in a church in Louisiana, big old boy, when I taught this. And the preacher was bigger than he was. And he wouldn't let him. It was after service. You know where I'd have kicked him in the first place? The reader, I'm good at that. You learn that in the agency. The readers of Ezekiel's day would have laughed him to scorn. I'm persuaded that God meant for our final generation to picture a great mighty army fully armed to the teeth with all the known modern weapons of warfare. That's exactly what's going to happen. Where did they get the money? Why didn't Israel settle on oil? They got the money and they bought all the weapons from the Russians and the Chinese and we sold them to them. Now we're going to eat our own metal. Verse 5 names the names of the people from which Antichrist will draw his initial attacking horde. Persia, Ethiopia, and Libya with them, all of them with shield in heaven. Persia, that's Iran, was basically the people east of the Euphrates, which today would be Iran and Iraq. Libya corresponds with the location of modern-day Libya. And Ethiopia in Ezekiel's day was made up mostly of what we call Sudan today. Once again, the point is made that they will be fully armed. See, God didn't write this just to them. He wrote it to them so they could understand the places. And he told us to study to show ourselves approved unto God. He didn't tell us to grab a book and start studying 3 points, a poem of dust, and high ho silver away. He told us to believe what he said. Here's the last part. Verse 6 continues to name the people of Ezekiel's day from which he will draw his support. And by knowing where they lived at that time, we can at least attempt to identify those nations that occupy those areas today. Gomer and all his bands, the house of Togarmath. You can look on the map. I got a map in my book. I think it's in 777. And all his bands, and many people with thee. Quite frankly, I have searched and researched the writings of many historians, both ancient and modern, and in the end, knowing that honesty is the best policy, I can only say that there is a diversity of opinion. But I have showed you my opinion is based on the Bible. It's not based on archaeology. It's not based on popular writers that make a lot of money and shift these things around like wildfire. Up to this point, as regard the locations of Meshach, Tubal, Persia, Libya, and Ethiopia, I have presented a case from both the scriptures and historical records, which I believe is substantial. But in the case of Gomer and the house of Togarmath, as to where they were settled in Ezekiel's day, I can only give a rough approximation. The house of Togarmath and descendants of Gomer were sandwiched between the Magogites, the Scythians, to the north, and Meshach, Tubal, and Persia, Iran, to the south. They stretched from west to east across modern-day Turkey into the area south of the Caucasus Mountains and through it extreme northern Iraq and Iran. Turkey is perhaps the country which is identified as being located centrally as the House of Togarmath, where his bands of descendants extended out from him. Well, I finished the thing, and so I've done my duty. I remember when I was overseas, and I was in Vietnam, and I was in French Morocco, and here and there. And I would be waiting to go home to see Imogene. I was so anxious to end that TDY. My TDY assignment here is just about finished. And I've been so excited. I'm going to get to go home and see Imogene. You all are going to get to go home. You say, Brother McElmurray, you don't know that. Oh, yes, I do. And we ought to be rejoicing inside ourselves that we're going to get to see a lot of people. We're going to get to see those that have gone on before us. And I think that we ought to thank God every day from that, and we ought to rejoice in our hearts continually. J.A. Vance, would you just